Breaking news today on Seculo as the U.S. Supreme Court strikes down a New York gun law the ACLJ filed in this case. We'll get you updated.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
This is a momentous decision for gun rights advocates and for the Second Amendment.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
It has all of the elements that you often associate with a Thomas opinion. He brings up sort of originalist history, swatting back arguments from later and after the ratification as largely irrelevant to understanding the intent behind the Second Amendment.
And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. Well, there's been a major victory for gun rights. The ACLJ filed in this case out of New York, and it does not just affect New York, but it'll affect laws in California, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey as well. This was these laws that prevented average citizens from being able to get a concealed carry permit. So you could apply to get a concealed carry permit, but you had to have a special reason that you needed, a specific harm or specific threat. And so for most folks, they couldn't point to a specific threat and it couldn't be general. So it discriminated between like celebrities and athletes and people, you know, people with significant resources, maybe financially, who could say, you know, I'm at risk. But the average person, of course, was not being approved by New York to have a concealed carry permit. And what the Supreme Court said today, an opinion written by Justice Thomas, very clearly 6-3, the Second Amendment is no different than the First Amendment. And when you have a Second Amendment right, that right is for everyone. And this bar to being able to conceal carry, the right is not stuck in your home. You can't just say, okay, you have a Second Amendment right to keep your weapon at home, to protect your home. No, it involves being out in the public as well. And again, I think it's a major decision in light of two. What is being proposed in Congress as we speak right now, some of those laws, how they could be affected by language like this, which is such a clear, yet again from the court, third time. We saw it out of Heller. We saw it out of the case out of Chicago and now out of New York, where the court has said you cannot bar people's basic Second Amendment rights.
Yeah, what's interesting here is Justice Thomas writes that the constitutional right to bear arms in public for self-defense is not a second-class right. Subject to an entirely different body of rules than the Bill of Rights of other guarantees of the Bill of Rights. We know of no other constitutional right that an individual may exercise only after demonstrating to the government officials some special need. They called it proper cause in New York. He says that's not how the First Amendment works. It's not how the Sixth Amendment works. And it's not how the Second Amendment works when it comes to public carry for self-defense. New York's proper cause requirement violates the Constitution. Now, what's interesting here is he used history, and he used, in fact, language that equates the Second Amendment Bill of Rights, protection of Second Amendment rights, to the First Amendment. That was the first time that's really been that clear. Cece?
Yeah, and I would point out, too, for anybody who thinks this is deciding more than it is, that in Alito's concurring opinion, he points out that our holding decides nothing about who may lawfully possess a firearm or the requirements that must be met to buy a gun, nor does it decide anything about the kinds of weapons that people may possess. Right. It's a very narrowly held opinion, but you do have a right to possess a gun.
Andy, we only got a minute here, but it does, right across the street in the Congress, they're debating the laws on school safety, which I believe should be harden the target, should be the first rule. But some of those laws are a bit vague, and I think going to be subject to real attack here, unless tightened up drastically.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Jay, because they're now debating the Safe Communities Act or Safe Cities Act that is supposedly bipartisan in orientation. But now that this decision has just come from the Supreme Court of the United States in a 6-3 ruling, opinion by Justice Thomas, that's going to affect very seriously the language that's contained in this legislation that is pending before Congress, because they're now going to have to take into account the language of that bill is going to have to take into account the holding of the Supreme Court today.
I think this is, again, it's a significant victory, a time when I know people are concerned about gun rights and restrictions being put in place that may be unconstitutional. To get this kind of clear message from the court, it's a big deal. to Secular. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. This is a major victory for the Second Amendment, yet again at the court. You know, I think what you're seeing and what the courts have been very clear about, especially the U.S. Supreme Court, is that these anti-gun folks who are not really reasonable or rational in their approach, like in New York saying, well, you can get it if you're a special person. So if you're a, you know, politician, they get, of course, armed protection. And if you're a celebrity, if you can prove some kind of, if you can hire a lawyer who can put together some kind of petition for you to the New York State to say that you face a specific threat, then you can have a concealed carry permit and carry your handgun outside the home. And the Supreme Court has said no. I think what it is a warning to states and to the Congress as well, that this is a real right. And then without a constitutional amendment, this is no different than the freedom of speech. And that's how the court is, this court is going to interpret it, which means when you try to put any restrictions on it, they are going to look at it with the most heightened scrutiny available under the law,
which is strict scrutiny,
which means it's very difficult for your regulations and restrictions to, especially when you're already acknowledging, well, you can get a gun, but you can't get it this way. You know, so I think this is a big warning to how we look at this. And when we talk about safety in schools and other issues like that, I think it's another issue where we need to point to how do we secure schools with more security officers, put more security there. Because I can see the writing on the wall already on this.
Yes.
With some of the things we talked about yesterday, like looking back at your juvenile record and then
where it was vague.
And it didn't say criminal record. It just said looking at juvenile history. And them say, well, if this is a fundamental right, as the court has again, it's done it before, but it's again declared it is, just like the First Amendment rights, then looking back, you know, depriving somebody of that right because of what they did as a minor, especially if it's vague, like it wasn't, they weren't actually convicted of something, could become very difficult whether you like that policy or not. So people, I think, have to rethink in light of this decision how you move forward, because a lot of these anti-gun folks, they are actually broadening gun rights.
By
passing these laws, they are broadening out the Second Amendment rights because they are too over the top and they are not rational. Maybe Democrats will finally get rational on this issue and realize that you can't go so extreme anti-gun when the Constitution is so clear.
Yeah, and what's interesting here is that's why when you have language like what's being discussed across the street in the House, it has to be very specific. It can't be vague. It can't be overbroad. But listen to what Justice Alito asked during the oral argument. I think this is fascinating.
I want you to think about people like this, people who work late at night in Manhattan. It might be somebody who cleans offices, might be a doorman at an apartment, might be a nurse or an orderly, might be somebody who washes dishes. None of these people has a criminal record. They're all law-abiding citizens. They get off work around midnight, maybe even after midnight. They have to commute home by subway, maybe by bus. When they arrive at the subway station or the bus stop, they have to walk some distance through a high crime area, and they apply for a license and they say, look, nobody has said, I am going to mug you next Thursday. However, there have been a lot of muggings in this area and I am scared to death. They do not get licenses. Is that right?
That is in general right, yes. If there's nothing particular to them, that's right.
I mean, okay, so that part of it is it kind of showed you how ridiculous some of this language is. Wes, what's your thought on this?
Yeah, I thought that was one of the most significant portions of the oral arguments. The New York law catered to an elitist mentality often exhibited by the left, where the rich and the famous can get a permit to defend themselves and carry a gun, even though they live in some of the best neighborhoods. But a restaurant worker who lives in a high crime neighborhood cannot get a permit to carry a gun. Besides that, Jay, this law in New York was very subjective. In each county, the official that was charged with granting or denying the application for a permit, the criteria was very, very vague as to who gets a permit and who does not. And so it was really up to the local officials, which was very subjective and unfair to the average citizen. And I'm glad the court held the way it did.
You know, I think, again, I want to go to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C., because, Than, right now in Washington, they are voting on gun restrictions and new gun safety measures. I wouldn't say it's not really restrictions as much as new measures trying to have states put in new measures. But I think now that states are going to look at this and say, well, we have to be very careful and how we write any kind of new legislation, even though the legislation is popular, because of holdings like this that make it very clear that there is a Second Amendment right, and that Second Amendment right applies the same to the celebrity and the politician as it does to the average person.
I think there's no doubt, Jordan, that this opinion is a warning shot to the bill that's being voted on literally as we speak. I'm watching the tally in the United States Senate right now. There are 54 votes in favor of invoking cloture on it right now. They need to get to 60 to move to end debate, and a final vote would probably be later today. But Jordan, you mentioned the juvenile records section of the bill. I also think the red flag language is going to be maybe viewed differently in light of this opinion that just came out. Because remember, this is the language that gives money from the federal government to the states to set up red flag laws. Well, look, states are going to set those up in very different ways. Yes, there's a due process test that has to be met in the statute. But Jordan, I can see all sorts of as applied challenges that are going to be in play here, because that is the deprivation of a right before an actual act has been committed. It's basically if you think that there is a threat from someone and, you know, they're trying to stop suicides, they're trying to stop mass shootings. But look, I don't think there's any doubt that this opinion today is going to cause some people to look at this ruling in a new light. Now, look, I do think it's going to pass the Senate today. Likely it'll move to the House either tonight or tomorrow and move out. But even if it gets approved, Jordan, I think it remains to be seen whether or not this entire new law, if passed, would stand.
You know, it's interesting here, Andy, is what Justice Thomas, by equating the Second Amendment with the First Amendment, which is what he's done, and the other Bill of Rights, he also said this: to declare the island of Manhattan a, quote, sensitive place simply because it's crowded and protected generally by the New York City Police Department is not enough to override this right to bear arms if you qualify. But this idea of proper cause was so void, so vague, so overbroad, so malleable by the administrators of the New York carry permit laws, the administrators that would put those laws into place, it was basically void for vagueness, which is, again, a very central First Amendment free speech principle that's now being applied equally here to the Second Amendment.
Yes, Jay. When you talk about void for vagueness, it brings back memories of cases that we had before the United States Supreme Court in Jews for Jesus and the overbreadth cases. And the void for vagueness analogy, you can't just simply say, you got to show me good cause why you should get the gun, because that applies to the same thing that would exist with the First Amendment. You've got to show me a good cause why you should be allowed to stand on the street corner and pass out pamphlets or speak. Or even the Sixth Amendment, which says you have a right to a public and speedy trial. Why don't you just put a restriction on that you have to show a special need or good cause why your trial should be public and speedy? So it applies across the board to all the Bill of Rights. And Justice Thomas correctly made the analogy that the Second Amendment should not be given second status to other constitutional provisions in the Bill of Rights by, as he did historically, going through and showing that it is not a second-class amendment.
Right.
It may be the Second Amendment, but it's not a second-class amendment.
Right. What's interesting also is this applies just to handguns, to be clear. So this is not getting into assault weapons, what are called assault weapons. It's not getting into any, and Justice Thomas in this opinion says that you can have you're not allowed to have weapons. For instance, you can't walk around with a surface-to-air missile in Manhattan. And he points that out, so you've got to put this in context. But there's something else that was here, and I want to reiterate, and that is this does not, as Cece, as you said, get into the qualifications of who can obtain the permit. It doesn't address that. It's the right to carry if you qualify.
Right. So, again, Alita was very great in explaining that. You know, this law, again, was only if someone could apply and get a permit, only if he can demonstrate a special need for self-protection distinguishable from that of the general community. And that's the issue, that it's for this Second Amendment protection is for everyone, not just someone who's specific.
Right.
And Alita, again, was very clear. Yes, Thomas was very clear about that, and Alita was clear about, look, we're not talking about what, you can have requirements
right.
of who can buy a gun, and you can have restrictions on it, but you can't make this distinction.
Yeah, to be clear, that's in a concurring opinion.
Yes.
So, and there was not a majority on that, but I think the sentiment is, I think you're right on the sentiment there. Wes, very quickly, because we're going to move on to other topics. But this was a, for the Second Amendment advocates, this was a big day.
It is, you know, and the Second Amendment properly interpreted, it allows for common sense gun regulations. Yep. The gun control fanatics will say this is horrible, but really properly interpreted, there are regulations you can put on it, but a citizen does not have to give a reason for exercising their constitutional rights.
What it does say though, Jordan, is when you're drafting legislation across the street, be very specific. Don't be vague. Don't be overbroad. It's going to be struck as unconstitutional.
Yeah, which means you've got to really come together and you've got to have a clear head, clear mind on this, and not the extremists on the left, the anti-gun movement, they're not going to get anywhere. And it's not, these laws are going to be declared unconstitutional if they go that path. If they aren't very specific, and you can't leave things as vague as we were already pointing out how vague they were yesterday on the broadcast. We'll be right back on Secular. Welcome back to Seculo. As we await the Dobbs decision, which could come tomorrow, could be next week, and the case involving Roe versus Wade, the leaked draft opinion, you know all about that. But you know that since the leaked draft opinion, the pro-abortion extremists have been attacking, literally, that's the right word to use, pro-life pregnancy centers or any symbols of what they consider to be pro-life organizations and groups. And we've seen so they go so far as firebombing attacks, five of those, where offices have been totally burned out, to vandalism, smashed windows, smashed equipment. And we saw another one of those last night in Michigan. There is a congressman, a conservative congressman, Republican congressman, Tim Walberg. He shares the same in a building with the Jackson Right to Life in Michigan, and both were vandalized, the building. And there was, again, there was, you had, when we're talking about vandalized, not just spray painting, as you can see on the wall there is the spray painting part, but also vandalism inside, actually. So you see, I mean, sometimes the smashed windows. So they're going to some extent, and it's whether or not you're willing to, and that's just last night. There you go. There you see. So it makes your office unable to operate, of course. You have to repair, but this is what we have seen, and we've also seen the Jane's Revenge Group. We're going to talk about this with Congressman Nancy Mace in the second half hour of the broadcast. She's going to be joining us because Democrats are just ignoring it. Pro-abortion Democrats are ignoring that these attacks just continue to increase, and that Jane's Revenge has called not just for the attacks to increase on the pro-life pregnancy centers or on pro-life organizations, but to also call for riots in Washington, D.C., the night that they get a decision on Dobbs.
So you've had this increase of attacks on pro-life crisis pregnancy centers and pro-life organizations generally. We just talked about this the other day. Since then, there have been more attacks, correct?
CC? That is correct. So the running tally of attacks on churches, pro-life organizations, property, and people since the Dobbs leak, on May 2nd, we reported just 2 days ago it was 60, and now it's 63. So in 2 days, we've had three more attacks on pro-life centers.
So here's what the question I ask, Andy, and I keep asking this, and I keep not getting an answer. Where is the Department of Justice? And we'll get into the politicians not responding, but where is DOJ on this?
Well, the DOJ head is in Kiev making political statements when he should be in Washington, D.C., directing prosecutors to go out into the areas where these crimes have been occurred and to prosecute those people responsible. This is ultimately the job of the Attorney General of the United States, the head of the Justice Department in the Biden administration. These are hate crimes. These are not only federal crimes, hate crimes, but these are also state criminal offenses, and they should be prosecuted. And the Justice Department is absent without leave, Jay. That's the reality. Yep. They're just absent without leave and without right and are not pursuing these cases that they ought to be pursuing vigorously as people and property are being put at risk by these vandals.
I think of the civil rights cases back in the 40s and 50s and really in the 50s. And it took a long time for the Department of Justice and the FBI to finally get in there and help the civil rights protesters. And you'd think you would learn, Wes, from history here, that waiting is not usually a good idea.
Absolutely. You know, and this is the same DOJ that wanted to investigate parents at Board of Education meetings as domestic terrorists, and yet they're not investigating Jane's Revenge as a domestic terrorist group, which it appears that's what they are. And I think it's important to also point out what these pro-life pregnancy centers do. They provide prenatal care and counseling. They help a woman through labor and delivery. And after the baby is born, they either help her with infant care and training and supplies on that, or if they want to adopt the child, they help them with the adoption process. These are not radical groups. They're not anti-abortion as much as they are pro-life. And they're trying to help women who are carrying a baby. And yet these other groups are domestic terrorist groups who are attacking these people and their offices. It's unconscionable.
Well, and I think that what we have to watch out for is that we haven't seen the worst of this. This has been the prelude to because based off a leaked decision. So if that decision holds, that we saw the leaked draft opinion, that just clearly overturn Roe versus Wade. I mean, all you need is that sentence right there. They've said the flyers are all over D.C. Riot. They didn't say protest. They said riot. And it's getting no attention by Pelosi, by Biden, by Democrat leaders. That's why Congresswoman Nancy Mace from South Carolina is going to be joining us. She's calling on her committee to hold a hearing. You know, Jamie Raskin, obsessed with, you know, still impeaching Donald Trump, is ignoring attacks on currently on Americans that happen to be pro-life. But any kind of legitimate organization, which they all are, even though the states love to try and shut them down. And while it's so interesting that, by the way, while they're being attacked in states like New York and firebombed in states like New York, New York is trying to overly regulate and shut them down. So they see, it's interesting, they see the pro-life pregnancy centers, as which I think speaks volumes to the work that they do, as the number one threat to their abortion business if Roe versus Wade is overturned.
And we have been representing these pro-life pregnancy centers for 4 decades, and the work they do is incredible. But as you just said, Jordan, and Cece can attest to this because she's handled the cases with us, the attempts to regulate them out of existence is happening while they're being firebombed in New York. Seriously. New York legislature trying to move forward on legislation to target them more for restrictions while what's happening? While they're being firebombed in New York. And we've won these cases, by the way, at the Supreme Court, but go ahead.
They're always the target. The crisis pregnancy centers, as Wes said, they do great work and they don't charge for any of their services. And they are on the front lines and they are the main target always by Planned Parenthood and the abortion lobby, because they are the ones that are giving the information to pregnant women, letting them know, make an informed decision about their pregnancy. And, you know, that cuts into the bottom line of Planned Parenthood, because once people are informed, once women are informed, they choose to have and keep their baby.
You know, I want to take this call from Cody, because we're talking about the gun issue in New York, and he had a specific experience with it before this decision today. Hey, Cody, thanks for calling in. I wanted you to be able to share your story with the folks on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. Yeah, so basically, I applied for my pistol permit years ago, and in that process, I ended up waiting for over a year. Now, for the township I was in, that was fairly normal. Cheektowaga is highly populated, and they delegated, you know, the paperwork, a lot of it, to the different townships. So I waited over that year and basically called in to see where the paperwork was. Got no answers. So I continue to wait. Now it's a little bit longer. I call my uncle because he taught Billy Boulder, who was the judge who made the final decisions on whether you got your pistol permit and whether it was going to be a concealed carry permit or not, because that's the two different things, right? You can get your pistol permit, but you can't carry it anywhere except for the range. So anyways, long story short, he calls the judge. The judge makes the call. He comes back to me and says, oh, it went out for a background check 3 times out of Cheektowaga. Now, there was no problem with my background check, but they sent it out 3 times.
Yep.
Then, so it finally makes it downtown. The judge has to call again. I had a call back 3 months later because I thought, well, the judge made
Did
a call.
Did you finally
What's
get
going
it?
On now?
Did you finally get it?
I finally got it after
it
the
only
second
took
time.
2.5 years. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's also the absurdity here, is that while they had this law in place, and see, that's what I said to these anti-gun folks. Let this be a warning to you. That you put in bad laws, the precedent is there to strike them down. This is a right that Americans have under the Second Amendment. It's a fundamental right. We'll be right back, second half hour.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
So just if you're just joining us in the second half hour of the broadcast, a major case out of the Supreme Court today involving Second Amendment rights. I know that we filed this. I want to make that clear, too, because ACLJ, I think some people might not understand how much we do file in these cases. We've been filing, we filed in Heller, we filed the case out of Chicago. We filed in this case in New York to protect your Second Amendment rights. And we very similar reasoning in our brief to what the Supreme Court ultimately held, which is that this is a fundamental right that you can't pick and choose then who gets the concealed carry permit based off of having to show, and you just heard from a caller if you were joining us that first half hour, if you have to show some specific threat about why you need this, how difficult the process was, that will be no more. Now, New York will have to figure out, but it's not just New York that had laws like this. California, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, and New Jersey. This is also at the same time, we talked to Than Bennett earlier, while Congress is trying to move on some bipartisan gun regulations and restrictions, I will tell you, some of the language they use in those that legislation, which is kind of vague, like your juvenile history. What does that mean? It doesn't mean criminal record.
Right.
So issues like that, when the Supreme Court, Justice Thomas today, said this is a fundamental right. You can treat it no differently than the freedom of speech. Then when you're, it means that any restriction is going to be held to the highest standard of scrutiny still. And that these states, I'm going to just say this, these states and localities, and maybe the federal government, when they try to get involved here, they write bad laws. It ends up expanding the Second Amendment.
Every time. Because vague laws over broad laws result in, and this, we've been doing this since the 1980s. When you have laws that are overbroad or vague, or you don't treat a constitutional right as a constitutional right, and you have a conservative Supreme Court, the end result of that's going to be not very good for those that are trying to get the laws passed. I think there are some laws that should be passed, like we talked about. I'd give as much money as we could to tighten the schools up. That there's safety resource officers there, metal detectors, whatever you need to do. That's a common sense approach to legislation. But even there, you better be specific, Andy, on how you draft it.
That's exactly right. And I agree with you, Jay. School resource officers, school safety officers are desperately needed in our communities. But now we have to look at it in light of this decision of the Supreme Court of the United States with respect to the New York law, where you got to show a good reason or a just cause why you should be allowed to carry a gun or get a license. So they need legislators who are looking at these, tightening up the local communities and our schools, and which I agree with you entirely, needs to be done, need to do it very cautiously and very carefully so that they don't impact upon the constitutional right prescribed in the Second Amendment. As I said earlier in the program, it may be a Second Amendment to the Constitution, but it's not a second-class amendment. It's entitled to equal dignity with the other amendments, and drafters of legislation need to be very careful in writing their laws to comply with.
The other thing that we're looking at, of course, is the attack on pro-life centers, which I'm going to have Cece give you this number again. Since we were on the air 48 hours ago, has already changed.
Right. So it was 60 attacks, which is ridiculous, since the leak, Dobbs leak on May 2nd. It's now 63. So there have been three attacks on pro-life centers in the last 48 hours.
Yeah, and then this flyer is going around Washington, D.C. We can put it up on the screen. I think for folks, we can put it on the screen. And it's calling for a D.C. Call to action night of rage. The night SCOTUS overturns Roe versus Wade. So they don't say which night because they don't know when that will happen. But that will give people plenty of time if they want to do this. But it's not a protest. It says hit the streets. You said you'd riot. To our oppressors, if abortions aren't safe, you're not either.
Where is the Department of Justice?
And that's why we're going to talk to Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina. Her subcommittee on these issues, she's calling saying, why are we not holding hearings on this? We see the violence. We know what's coming. The Supreme Court is barricaded right now. We've got the flyers out. We have the actual attacks. We saw the attacks in Michigan last night. They're happening all across the country. Why is no one investigating this? Why are Democrats remaining silent? We will talk to Nancy Mace about that. We come back on Seculo. As always, support our work at ACLJ.org. Just a reminder, again, on those Second Amendment issues, the ACLJ standing up for you, in this case, out of the Supreme Court. All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are joined now by Congresswoman Nancy Mace, South Carolina. And the Congresswoman, as we've been talking about these attacks on pro-life pregnancy centers, she serves as part of the Government Committee on Oversight and Reform, but specifically the Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Civil Liberties. And Congresswoman Mace, let me welcome you to Seculo, but first say, you are calling on the subcommittee chair, Jamie Raskin, to hold hearings on this violence against pro-life pregnancy centers that we have seen. Whether it's spray painted vandalism, whether it's firebombing. We saw another attack last night in Michigan, which included vandalism. And you said so far, as we've heard, it's just been like silence from the Democrats on this issue involving attacks on the pro-life pregnancy centers.
Yeah, and we've had several hearings on right-wing violence, but none on left-wing violence. And I will tell you, having been in a few of these hearings and having the FBI come and testify, they don't categorize these groups like Jane's Revenge or Antifa. They aren't even keeping track of that as a category of violence within the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And I'm someone who's been attacked by extremists. My house was spray painted last summer. I've had my car keyed. Having been a victim of political violence, we've got to look out for both sides of the aisle. And there have been over 40 attacks over the last couple of months of this kind of domestic extremism, and we ought to be having hearings about it. This should be equal opportunity to look at the kind of violence that we're seeing across the country. And then this week, with the advent or oncoming potential Roe v. Wade decision by the Supreme Court, we're seeing signs and threats of violence for people to act on those threats. And so this is something that's got to be nipped in the bud by both sides, and they need to do it immediately.
Congresswoman, one of the things that I've been very concerned about here, and I've articulated this a couple of times, and you're right, there's been, when you add the churches to the list of places that have been attacked for the pro-life positions, we're closer to 63. In fact, three that just got added in the last couple of days. But what I've been very, very concerned about, very troubled by, frankly, is the lack of action by the United States Department of Justice, by the Attorney General Merrick Garland. Has anybody on the Hill hearing anything from the DOJ on any of this?
No, we're not. It's been dead silence, like on every other important issue and crisis of Joe Biden's own creation that we've seen over the last several months. It's been very quiet, and that's not where we should be right now. We're seeing, you know, violence increase across the country over the last 2 years, and every city and every state has seen some form of violence. We're seeing shootings increase in my home state of South Carolina. And, you know, what are we doing about it? And how are we holding these people accountable? And it's churches, it's synagogues. I sat in on a security briefing 2 weeks ago for one of our local synagogues in Charleston. These are real issues facing real Americans, and they're not being addressed by this administration or this Department of Justice.
I mean, to me, it's ignoring, you know, Americans. Like, the pro-life pregnancy centers are so demonized, Congresswoman Mace, by the left. I feel like that's part of why this is a group, you know, in New York right now, three were firebombed and, you know, real vandalism done, not just the spray painting. And at the same week as this Jane's Revenge group wanted, was putting out the message and saying, claiming they're going to do this, also calling for riots in D.C. the night the Dobbs decision comes out and the flyers all over Washington. But Congressman Mace, the night, the day that was all occurring, They released a press release saying how they're going to try and shut down those pro-life pregnancy centers at the state level. We've seen them called horrendous names by some of your colleagues in Congress, calling them a mis- and disinformation centers.
Fraud.
So they're not being treated just like any other American's organization, lawful business that is under attack.
No, and you've seen Jane's Revenge claim responsibility for over 15 of the attacks that we've seen and brag about it. You have a president, Joe Biden, who won't condemn protesters showing up on the lawns of our Supreme Court justices because of the impending Roe v. Wade decision, which, by the way, is illegal to do. And, you know, more or less encouraging that kind of protest. And so, you know, we aren't following the law like at all in any of this because they have a different perspective. And if women want to protect their baby or give their baby up for adoption or have family planning resources that doesn't kill their child, they ought to have access and safe access to those churches and faith-based communities who are providing those resources for those women. They should be equally protected as anyone who's showing up at any other Planned Parenthood or whatever. And that's not what's happening. And that's only further causing division in this country.
You know, you write in your letter to Jamie Raskin that the preservation of our democratic society demands that we take action to root out violence, no matter where it occurs and whatever its motivation is. You say we must be united in our efforts to preserve our civil society and contemn all violence. My question is this. We've had inaction by the Department of Justice. We've had no action by your colleagues in Congress. And we don't even have local action by the local police departments. You've got an organization, like you said, this Jane Revenge, which is calling for, quote, you said you'd riot. And crickets out of the Department of Justice on this. So I applaud you, we do, at the American Center for Law and Justice for taking the initiative to get this back front and center, because you're right. This is violent extremism targeting a viewpoint, which is unconstitutional. Your thoughts?
Well, when Republicans get in the majority later this year, we've got to make sure that we have these hearings, that we subpoena folks. When they don't show up, we hold them in contempt to get to the bottom of it and to bring our officials in the Department of Justice accountable for not addressing this issue. I want to know how they're going to address it, how they're going to protect our communities and keep them safe and keep women safe, no matter what their political viewpoints or their viewpoints are on life. And so it's going to be incumbent upon us to do that moving forward and to hold ourselves and each other accountable for getting this administration and the DOJ to get them to do what they're supposed to be doing, which is follow the laws in this country that were created.
I mean, it's like they love doing the hearings on domestic violent extremism. And I think that the only way that those become legitimate fully to the American people, as you've heard, you've sat through those hearings and there are legitimate concerns there. But when you ignore an entire half of that domestic violent extremism that comes out of the left, Congresswoman Mace, the American people don't take seriously the other side of the extremism either, which isn't good. And so if you're not going to look at it as a holistic approach and it's going to be all partisan, then people ignore it. And that's not good for America.
No, and it's both sides too, and you can't have one side holding one accountable and then you ignore the left altogether. That is not what we should be doing in this country, and that's one of the reasons that we have sowed so much division within our communities is how partisan this has been, and it's not been done in an equal way. And I think that at the very minimum is the low bar, right? Is to hold everybody accountable. You break the law, you should be held accountable, no matter what, no matter what your political perspective is, and that's not what's happening in this country. And it's going to be coming upon Republican leadership and people like myself to move that ball forward and to do the right thing no matter what.
Congresswoman, we appreciate the stand you're taking on this. Thanks for being with us today. Very important. We'll keep you, please keep us engaged on this, informed. We're working on it too. Thank you for your help.
Thank you.
That's Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina. I want to go to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. We've got some calls coming in, too, on the gun safety laws, too. So let's go to Bob in Virginia on line one. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob. This is Bob from Virginia. I'm a retired police officer. And one of the things in Virginia we have is this red flag law. And what is disturbing is it denies you due process. My question is, do you think these laws will be challenged in court?
Yes, and I think it depends on the language. Some of the laws, Florida had, listen, people talk about Florida as being, you know, this super red, very conservative state. It has the red flag laws.
Yes, it does.
So you have to look at, I think, state by state. You know, what does Virginia's red flag law look like? What is the, you say it doesn't have due process. I mean, if it has no due process, it wouldn't have upstand at all. So it must have some, but does it have enough to survive scrutiny in light of the fact that we've gotten yet another very clear opinion out of the Supreme Court? I don't know how many times they're going to have to do it, but
they sure did it.
But
today.
It's because they're all the anti-gun world is always trying to come up with a new way to keep you from being a legal, law-abiding citizen with a firearm. You know, that's their focus. And every time they do that, they are expanding the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Second Amendment.
You know, it's interesting in this one, Andy.
But I do think there's going to be a lot of legal challenges to any of new legislation.
There's going to have to be. Any legislation, including red flag laws, are going to be very specific and narrowly tailored, is what the Supreme Court says.
Andy. Yeah, that's exactly what the court is saying. It's giving a very loud and clear warning, 6-3, that when you draft these laws, you don't have to give a good reason or just cause why you have to exercise a constitutional right. Who ever heard of that? As a preface to the exercise of the Bill of Rights, you have to show just cause or a good reason. And that's whether it is to carry a gun, whether it is to have a speedy trial, whether it is the right to speak on a street corner or a sidewalk or to hand off leaflets. You preface it by having to show just cause, and you give the public official the discretion to determine whether the cause is just enough. That's not the American way. That's not what the framers said. And the Supreme Court of the United States hammered down on that today.
All right, folks, we'll continue to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. If you've got questions about the Second Amendment case at the U.S. Supreme Court, a question about, again, this violence that we're seeing with the pro-life pregnancy centers, the threat of riots or comments there. We're getting into a little economy, too, in the next segment of the broadcast. So you don't want to miss that as we talk again about just where Joe Biden is, but also where's the Fed? Because what Jerome Powell's saying is not in line with what Joe Biden and the Biden administration are saying. Surprise, surprise. 1-800-684-3110 to be a part of the broadcast today. I encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. Let me just remind you again, we filed in the case in New York. We filed in Heller. We filed in Chicago. We stand up for your Second Amendment rights at the ACLJ. All right, we'll take one of the calls about the protection of the violence that we're seeing around the Supreme Court and pro-life prisoners, all related to the Dobbs case. And then we'll get into some of the economy and inflation, this insane statement by President Biden yesterday. Let's go to Whitney, though, first in Texas online, too. Hey, Whitney.
Hey there. Like Jay, I am just astounded by the inaction of Merrick Garland, especially considering that he aspired to be a Supreme Court justice. So you would expect that he would maybe put himself in the shoes of Brett Kavanaugh, but instead he has just steadfastly refused to protect them. And it might appear initially that he's just being petulant and perhaps he's feeling like sour grapes, but with the ongoing inaction coupled with what's going on with the crisis pregnancy centers,
right,
it seems like it might be something more malicious.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I can't read his mind, but I can read his actions. And his actions have been zero. There's a specific law that prohibits these targeted protests in front of Justice's house to affect the outcome of an opinion. And there's a federal law in place, and he will not enforce it. There is federal laws that do not allow for rioting in the streets, destruction of property, and he's doing no action. So I think part of the problem here, CC, we've talked about this before, is the inaction of the Department of Justice is being magnified each and every day so that we're all on pins and needles about when a Supreme Court decision is going to come out, is the country going to explode? And that was because the opinion was leaked. We still don't know what happened on that. Maybe the Supreme Court Marshal's office does know. But the opinion leaked with the intent to cause harm. Harm has been caused. The Department of Justice does nothing.
Right, and that was the intent all along.
Right.
What is happening is exactly the intent. And then when you have Merrick Garland doing absolutely nothing, even though there are laws in place that he should be enforcing that go against everything they're doing, the protesting at the justices, you know, houses and calling for riots, he needs to be engaged. And the fact that he's not, and the fact that the administration has not done anything to condemn these actions, just encourages people like Jane's Revenge to do more. That's why they can write a letter, put it in writing, that they're calling for escalating violence and declaring open season on pro-life health centers. That's why they can put up pamphlets all over D.C. saying it's a call to action for a night of rage. and calling people to riots. You said you'd riot, and nothing's being done. So you can see that I think the actions are going to actually escalate, and that is very scary because people are going to be harmed, and I think lives are going to be lost.
I want to go switch to the economy, Raider of the broadcast, because I want to go to this. This is Jerome Powell. He's asked by a good friend of ours, Senator Bill Hagerty of Tennessee, about the Biden administration blaming all the inflation, all of the woes on Russia and Putin. Take a listen, bite one.
Would you say that the war in Ukraine is the primary driver of inflation in America?
No, inflation was high before, certainly before the war in Ukraine broke out.
Okay, so there you go. Fed chair directly says inflation high well before the war in Ukraine broke out. Again, take a listen to Joe Biden. I want you to listen to this because Joe Biden gave this speech yesterday defending, talking about the gas tax and then holidays and should be done at the federal level, should be done at the state level. But he also went on this weird line of attack about supporting Ukraine and basically trying to demonize you if you question the inflation. Seriously, take a listen.
Knowing full well the cost. So for all those Republicans in Congress criticizing me today for high gas prices in America, are you now saying we were wrong to support Ukraine? Are you saying we were wrong to stand up to Putin? Are you saying that we would rather have lower gas prices in America and Putin's iron fist in Europe? I don't believe that.
Let's just make it clear right now. If let's say that war in Ukraine happened under President Trump, I don't think it would have, but let's say it did, and we were still a net exporter of energy, guess what the world would have needed more of from us? More energy, because they probably would have cut off Russian oil and gas. And guess who could have benefited from that? Actually benefited from cutting off Russian oil and gas to Western Europe? The United States, because we have the resources there where we could have been making money and building a better economy if, unfortunately, that war broke out. He shut it down. He declared war on the oil and gas industry in America.
And then tried to embarrass them with a letter that he wrote last week demonizing the gas industry, the oil and gas industry, and telling them to pump more and get these refineries going, but also saying, on the other hand, but I'm closing you down in a couple of years. And how much money did you make in the last year, and where did it go? I mean, this is the way they're doing it. But here's the irony of all this, Colonel Smith, is the Putin factor. That you had the Fed chair say the inflation was on its way before Putin invaded Ukraine. And yet President Biden has got this narrative in his thoughts that it is all Putin.
Yeah, I mean, he continually dodges any responsibility for this, which is so unbecoming to a leader. When he took office on January 20th of 2021, inflation was 1.4%. It is now 8.6%. The day he took office, gasoline was $2.33 a gallon. It is now $5 a gallon and higher in some places. It would be so refreshing, Jay, if he would simply at some point in a moment of utter honesty say, I may be partly responsible. I'm going to take a look at my policies and see what I need to do to adjust. Yesterday, he was accusing mom and pop service station owners of jacking up the prices and hurting the American people.
Didn't we figure out yesterday when we had our meeting that the gas tax rebate, which President Obama called a joke a long time ago, what was it, a half a cup or
a cup?
A half a cup of gasoline.
That's what it gives people, half a cup of gas.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's been picked up by the late night folks, which don't usually love picking on Democrat presidents, but James Corden, he made this joke about the President Biden's speech about the gas tax holiday. Take a listen.
He literally wants to hand the American people less than a quarter and be like, don't spend it all at once, huh?
Yes, 13 cents.
Yeah, well, this tells you where it's going. And the policy doesn't work.
No.
It's affecting the economy.
They did a big research study of it. Bloomberg published it. It actually caused, in some places, gas prices to go up. I mean, it actually can backfire. And it doesn't require, the way they try to sell this to the American people, is you don't necessarily get to see the benefit of that. That's really up to the company itself, so that it has to trickle down through the corporate world, and then they have to make the decision to lower the gas price. And we're talking about, by the time it goes into effect, if inflation continues on the path it is, it's eaten up immediately, even the tiny savings. It's not a plan because it doesn't increase supply. So if you don't increase the supply and the demand is still there, guess what happens? Inflation keeps going up.
All right, so here's what we're going to be waiting for tomorrow. Tomorrow is Friday. We're going to get more Supreme Court decisions. The two that we're looking for now, well, there are three. There's the stay in Mexico policy. There's the prayer at the football game policy. And then, of course, the Dobbs case, which is on abortion. So it could be tomorrow.
And there's the EPA case.
Could go into next week, right.
Yeah, I mean, and there's again, there's enough cases to where it goes into next week. Have they scheduled another day yet? So not yet on the calendar, but it would be like the most cases in one day. I don't know if they've ever done in modern history, nine in one day.
I mean, to read them.
Yeah, it's different.
They're not in court, so they're just releasing them. If they're done, they could be.
Yeah. I mean, likely by this afternoon, they would have put up another date if they.
Yeah.
Or announce it, I guess, in the morning.
Yeah.
So we're on it, you know, at the ACLJ. And definitely want to stay with us on the broadcast tomorrow because certainly more cases are going to come out, and it could be the Dobbs case is out. It's going to come out very soon, and we are ready to respond if the court, in fact, does overturn Roe versus Wade. Support the work of the ACLJ. I think today was a great example, too, of the work we do to protect your Second Amendment rights at the American Center for Law and Justice. Maybe doesn't always get the most attention on our broadcast, but we're there fighting in court using our legal expertise for you and another victory today for the Second Amendment at the Supreme Court. Go to ACLJ.org. Support our work. Talk to you.